Does it seem like every time you turn around or open up your wallet, you're shocked at the changes that have directly impacted your life in just 2.5 years? There's something that you can do to protect the value of your hard-earned savings and retirement accounts. Contact the folks at American Hartford Gold and talk to them about your options in diversifying your assets. Empower yourself with opportunity. Hold on to the fruits of your hard work and protect your future. So do what I did and call the only precious metal dealers I trust, American Hartford Gold. Diversify your portfolio with physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside of your IRA or 401k. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
I taught at the University of Pennsylvania for 4 years, and I used to teach political theory.
Not exactly. You got paid $1 million, but you didn't teach a class. Welcome to the Dana Show. This is Rich Zeoli from Dana's affiliate, WPHT, in Philadelphia, with you on a Friday. Hope you're having a great day so far. Happy Friday. It is a busy one in New York City right now. There's chaos erupting on the streets of New York City because people have had it. They have had it with the illegal immigrants in the city. And what you're seeing right now is a massive protest going on the streets of New York City. Total chaos. AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who may or may not be married, was out there saying, we got to give these migrants everything we need. And people are in the background chanting, close the border, close the border. So here on the Dana Show today, we got a lot to break down, including, of course, yesterday, the charges leveled against Hunter Biden, the president's idiot son. Boy, talk about a 180, right? I mean, they were going to give this guy the immunity deal of immunity deals, epic immunity deal. He wouldn't have to worry about a thing. He was golden. And then it all blew up because the judge asked the right questions. But they were going to put it all under this sweet little, people called it a sweetheart deal. I didn't call it a sweetheart deal. I said what it was. It was a deal to protect the president of the United States. It's a cover-up. It was a cover-up to protect the president of the United States and his finances. Now the only question is, what's changed in all these months that the Department of Justice, the same guy, David Weiss, who was, I love how people say Trump appointed. As Trump pointed out on Truth Social last night, David Weiss, as the United States Attorney for Delaware, was blue-slipped, as it's called. When you're blue-slipped, it means that the Democrat senators picked you. And this kind of horse trading happens all the time in Washington. You know, unless you have a really strong dog in the fight, you just go, you know, let the senators pick. It's not worth, I'll need them for something else down the line. It's not worth, you know, going. So David Weiss was, he's a Democrat. He was in the Obama Justice Department. They made him special counsel. So what? Nothing else changed. The charges against Hunter Biden, same evidence, same prosecutor, same prosecutorial team, same attorney general. So why now all of a sudden they went from giving him the immunity deal of immunity deals, now taking the tax stuff out, leaving it out on the open on the table, and charging him with 3 counts that could land him in jail for 25 years. Now, I don't think he's going to see a single day of prison time, but that's not really the point. The point is, what happened? What changed? And my belief is Joe Biden is done at this point. You heard this week David Ignatius from the Washington Post. He wrote this big column saying Joe Biden's too old to run. Joe Scarborough on Morning Joe the other day had David Ignatius on, and he says, Mika, when I tell you I talk to Democrats, it's not 99%, Mika. It's 100%, Mika. 100% of Democrats say Joe Biden is too old to run. He's too old to run. So is this all the effort now to get the old man out of the race? You know, listen, you pardon your kid, you're done politically, but at least we make all the other stuff go away. You know, we make all the tax stuff go away. We don't have to worry about 10% for the big guy or anything else. I mean, think of the change here, the complete and utter 180. That original immunity deal they gave Hunter Biden was going to shield him from everything he did connected to Burisma, China, Romania, and every other country in the world that he did business in. The only thing he would have had to worry about, and this is the reason why the deal fell through, was because he failed to register as a foreign agent under what's known as the FAR Act. That's it. That's the only thing that would have been hanging over him. And he's so dumb, and clearly, you know, he hires dumb lawyers, because instead of just taking this thing and moving on with his life and potentially facing a FARA charge, it's basically a slap on the wrist, the deal blew up. The judge asked the right questions. She had no ability to reject it because it was all put into this diversion agreement. The tax stuff was put in the gun stuff. Therefore, the judge had no authority to reject the original plea agreement, this cover-up of Joe Biden's crimes. And then it blew up in court because Hunter said, I thought I was getting immunity from everything I've ever done in my life. And it turns out, well, you are, but there's still potentially things, but it's no big deal. But that wasn't enough. Deal blows up. Merrick Garland names David Weiss special counsel. But he said, at the time, he said, David Weiss has all the authority he needs. He has all the authority he needs. He doesn't need to be a special counsel. Then he makes him special counsel and says, now David Weiss has all the authority he needs, even though I told you David Weiss had all the authority he needed. But nevertheless, now he has it, even though I told you before he had it. And these whistleblowers came forward and said David Weiss wanted to charge Hunter Biden in other venues, D.C. and California, but was told no, either by main justice, as it's called in D.C., or by the U.S. attorneys in that particular district. Well, that hasn't changed. There were no charges brought in D.C. There were no charges brought in California. This is the same stuff. This just could be before the same judge. This is the literally the same old, same old. So he got a title change, but that's it. So what changed? And where'd all the tax stuff go? How come those charges haven't come up against Hunter Biden yet? Now, I think my opinion is Joe Biden's got to go. The old man's got to go. Let's face it. The economy stinks. He's got all this corruption stuff, and he's lost it. He's lost it. And what do you think Joe Biden's going to be like a year from now? You know, it's very sad. You watch these people who are dealing with losing their mind, and it's very sad to watch them. If you've had a family member deal with being senile, you know, dementia, it's heartbreaking. And it's, as Nancy Reagan once said, it's a long, slow goodbye. It's painful, and it's heartbreaking and heart-wrenching. And how do you think Joe Biden's going to be cognitively 1 year from now, Friday, September 15th of 2024, we're getting ready for the first general election debates? I don't think he's going to be that good. I think he's going to be worse. He's going to be worse, of course, unless there's some miracle drug that comes out between now and then that fixes Alzheimer's or dementia. But I don't think that's on the horizon anytime soon. So the president's going to be in worse shape then. How's the economy going to be a year from now? Well, gas prices are about to go up. Inflation's not coming down. The Fed may raise interest rates one more time to try to get a hold of this thing. The housing market, if you've noticed around the country right now, it's very difficult for people right now to find a house in the middle class category. Sure, there's a lot of homes in above $1 million, you know, the $2 million, $3 million, $4 million category, but there's no inventory of middle class housing. So a lot of parts of the country right now, there are people who, say, like Philadelphia, for example. Well, I broadcast out of Philadelphia, but I live in South Jersey. I know. And there are a lot of people who love to move out of the city. The city, like a lot of cities that are run by Democrats, has a lot of poverty and terrible schools, and it also has a lot of crime. A lot of crime. So there's a lot of people who love to move out, but they can't find a house. There are no houses on the market in my area that are in the middle class category. Houses that we grew up in, my dad was a cop, right? So my mom was with us as kids, and my dad was a cop. And so we had your classic middle class suburban home. It was a nice house, don't get me wrong. It was three bedrooms or four bedrooms. It was very nice, nice backyard, but it wasn't a mansion. Those kind of homes today, they're going for $1 million in nice neighborhoods. You know, when I was a kid, the idea of a $1 million home would be something that, you know, Bruce Wayne lived in. You know, you got to be a multimillionaire to have that kind of a home. Nowadays, that's asking price, and people are getting into these major bidding wars. There was a house in New Jersey recently that was on the market for, I think, $650,000. Just your classic, like 2,000 square foot middle class home, wound up going for $860,000. Over $200,000 above asking price because there's nothing on the market. So again, the point is that Joe Biden has destroyed this economy. His policies have destroyed the economy. Recently, his decision to say no more drilling permits in Anwar. No, we're taking it out of the Arctic. And Saudi Arabia's playing their little games. You know, the OPEC's playing their games with oil. And because the United States of America said, we don't want to be the world's largest exporter of oil. We're not worried about it anymore. We want everybody to go EV. the gas prices, we are at their mercy. So how's the economy going to be in a year? Is it going to be better? Huh? People are going to be turning around and going, oh, man, I'm rolling in the money. And now we have this auto worker strike happening. So Joe, union guy Joe, you know, middle class Joe from Scranton, the guy who said the unions are everything, the guy who was going to turn around and say, yeah, you're going to have the most union friendly president ever. He's about to speak because the United Auto Workers are going on strike. So the president's walking to the podium now, and I'm just kind of curious to find out if the president of the United States, as 13,000 auto workers walk off, if the president will address anything regarding his son, Hunter, and the charges against him. And that's the question. Now, I'm not going to torture you with what Biden's saying right now, but I will give you the headlines when he's done. But basically, this is bad right now. This is bad for Biden. So the question I have is, if you're the Democrat Party, and you're the power brokers, you're the people in charge. As Vivek Ramaswamy says, the Democrat managerial class, are you rolling the dice with this guy? Are you rolling the dice with him that a year from now he's going to be able to deliver a win with everything going on? I don't think so. I think you want this geezer gone. I really do. Now, you know, the other day he got interrupted in answering a question. He was answering a question. Karine Jean-Pierre, the white, or somebody in the press corps, interrupts him and says, okay, everybody, thanks, everybody. And then they played orchestra music and took him off the stage like it was the Academy Awards. And he was going on too long. They literally started playing music to drown out the president of the United States of America so that he wouldn't say stupid things as he was answering questions. I've never seen that before in my lifetime. Have you? I don't think so. So again, you know, it's the dice. You're going to roll the dice on this, and then this is your guy? This is the guy you're bringing to the fight? I don't think so. I think they want him gone. And I think what's they're using Hunter Biden as leverage would seem to be the way this goes. All right, this is the Dana Show. We got a lot to chat about today. Biden is giving me the remarks on the auto worker strike and what's going to happen with that. Major chaos on the streets of New York City right now as people were chanting behind Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I'll play that audio for you when we get back. We have to make sure there's no curse words in it because the people are fired up and angry. In fact, Fox News went over to one guy on the streets of New York, and they were just waiting, you know, for the guy to drop an F-bomb or something like that. But people are angry. They've had it. You know, the illegal immigration problem, it's a crisis, and more people who are on the terror watch list. That's a story today on Yahoo News. Growing number of people on U.S. terrorist watch list encountered at the border, according to the Department of Homeland Security. How many people on the terror watch list have not been encountered at the border? 9/11 happened because we had people on the terror watch list who were inside the United States of America, if you remember. Well, how many people on the terror watch list have got in and were not detected at the border trying to cross illegally? That's the question. All right, it's the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zioli, in for Dana. We're coming right back.
Caltech invented the concealed carry category years ago with the P11, but did they stop there? Heck no. One innovation just led to another and another, and, well, just look at their latest, the P15. It's the lightest, thinnest, double-stack 9mm handgun on the market at only 14 ounces and 7/8 inches wide. The P15 has a 4-inch barrel and double-stack magazine that holds 15+1 total capacity. Its gator grip texture on the polymer version increases stability and makes for ambidextrous grip safety and easy, accurate handling. If you prefer a more vintage look, choose the metal version with classic wood panels and textured grips. The P15 has a Tritium Plus fiber optic front sight with a fully adjustable Tritium 2-dot rear to keep you on target in any situation. Make the P15 your choice for concealed carry. Learn more at KeltechWeapons.com. Sign up for the Keltec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories at KeltechWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C Weapons.com.
Flashback to Obamacare? Health insurance costs for employers are set to take their biggest jump in years. How does this affect you? Good luck getting a raise. With inflation still high, don't expect a thank you card from those who got subsidized health insurance. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Let's talk about what good faith is. They've had our economic demands for 6 weeks. We've told them from day one, we expect a bargain now, not wait till the end. They waited till last week. We had to file unfair labor practice charges on two companies to get them to come to the table. So they waited till the last week to want to get down to business. Shame on them, and what they're saying is complete BS.
That's the United Auto Workers president, who also said there should be no billionaires allowed. Welcome back to the Dana Show. The president just wrapped up his remarks a few minutes ago, or maybe he's still talking. I don't know. The TV cut away from him, saying the workers deserve a fair share. He's yet to comment on Hunter Biden. Dana pointed something out yesterday on X, the site formerly known as Twitter, when she said they're going after Hunter Biden for the gun charges because it's the only thing that doesn't connect to daddy. Well, it's true. That's very, very true. But I look at that as a shot across the bow. You know, we're going after him for the gun charges. Don't make us go after him for the other stuff, because the other stuff connects to daddy. I look at that as a shot across the bow. Maybe I'm wrong here, but they were going to give Hunter Biden immunity from everything, if you remember. Now, there is also that very strange story about the time the Secret Service agents in Delaware apparently went to the gun shop where Hunter bought the gun and tried to get all the paperwork. You remember that happened? It was back in 2018. This is when Hunter threw away his sister-in-law, who was his girlfriend at the time, Haley Biden, threw his gun out. She found it in the glove box of his truck, and she threw it into a trash can. Remember this story? It was across from a high school, and the gun went missing, and the shop there, the supermarket, they called the store, and the manager said, they asked everybody, and Hunter Biden, who's racist like his dad, as a couple of people who looked, I guess, Mexican walked by, Hunter said, there's a lot of shady people around here. And the cop said, like those guys? He goes, yeah, they're probably illegal. So Hunter's just as racist as his dad is. But anyway, so apparently, even though the Delaware State Police contradict this story, and so does the U.S. Secret Service, apparently the two Secret Service agents went into the gun shop that Hunter Biden purchased the weapon from and tried to confiscate all the paperwork. And the gun guy said, no, we're not giving it to you. We deal with ATF. Well, Hunter Biden was not a protectee at the time. So what's that all about? But anyway, it's time now for this.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Vegans, I really have no issue with you're a vegan if you just leave me alone. But sadly, most vegans, they spend so much time telling you they're vegan. And their cats are apparently healthier. Vegan cats, I guess, were cats that don't eat meat. Vegan cats are healthier than meat-eating felines, according to a study. I'm calling BS on that. I don't think vegan cats are healthier. I don't think vegans are healthier. I think we were born to eat meat and protein and not tofu. And that's why, I mean, really, tofu and all that stuff apparently is a connection between estrogen levels in guys and man boobs. I'm just saying. It is what it is, you know? Mogul Byron Allen makes a $10 billion bid for Disney's ABC and other networks. That's right. Byron Allen has made a $10 billion bid to buy Walt Disney's ABC television network and other assets, including FX and National Geographic cable channels. ABC, obviously, is also home to ABC News and the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos, who proceeded to say the other day that there's no evidence whatsoever that Joe Biden committed any high crimes and misdemeanors. ABC prides itself, of course, on having unbiased news people like that. That's, of course, obviously, you know, the guy worked for Clinton, so, but he's unbiased, don't worry. Fox News Channel's Brett Baer is going to present an exclusive interview with Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. I wonder if he'll ask him about Saudi Arabia's ties to 9/11. That could get juicy. And this is kind of a shame. Planned Parenthood hoped to meet the post-Roe economy, or post-Roe moment, but layoffs are shaking its staff. So Planned Parenthood is laying people off. Isn't that so sad to know? There'll be less people out there to butcher and help people butcher. And finally, Caesars paid a ransom. A ransom after suffering a cyber attack. The casino is the second major casino operator hit by hijacks and hackers in recent weeks. Whew. I mean, they are just a target-rich environment, huh? This is The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, from Dana's affiliate in Philadelphia, WPHT. We're coming right back.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit BlackRifleCoffee.com/Dana. That's BlackRifleCoffee.com/Dana.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
With that?
Yes, and ultimately I think that there are 3 points of consensus here that are very important in getting a solution to this issue. The first is that there is consensus here across geography and states on increased federal resources to cities and municipalities dealing with this issue.
That, of course, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of the Squad, as she's drowned out by people behind her chanting, close the border, close the border. People have had it. I mean, they've had it. Let me ask you a question, honestly. I mean, true question. Have you ever driven by, you've seen those signs on people's yards that say, no human is illegal? They usually, they're the hate has no home here signs, you know? No human is illegal, and we believe in science, and we believe in water, and all the other stuff, all the other nonsense. Imagine the no human is illegal, they mean illegal immigrants, that mindset, and then all of a sudden, the people come home one day from work, and they walk into their house, and they find migrants, as they call them, because they don't call them illegal immigrants, because no human's illegal, they find migrants just hanging out in their house, sitting on their couch, like, what's up, how you doing, saw your sign, thought I'd come in, pop a squat, you know, hang out for a little while, I'm not illegal, no human is, so I thought I'd hang out, hate has no home here. Hate takes up a lot of space, you know. So if you have no hate in your home, there's a lot of room for people. None of these people with those signs in their yards ever actually take in or offer to take in all these illegal immigrants. And if they walked in one day to find a bunch of illegal immigrants sitting on their couch, they would turn around and probably call the police. That's what's happening, though, in these cities. These are sanctuary cities run by liberal Democrats for decades. In my city of Philadelphia, for example, when a judge ruled that Philadelphia can have its sanctuary city policy, wherein if federal law enforcement requested that the Philadelphia courts or the Philadelphia police or the Philadelphia sheriff or anybody else hold somebody who's an illegal immigrant who's wanted for a crime, a serious crime, that Philadelphia would say, no, we don't cooperate. We don't turn you over to the federal authorities. When the courts announced that, Mayor Jim Kenney went into the hallway of the mayor's office in Philadelphia and did a horrible dance, by the way. The guy has no rhythm. And sang a song. He also has no key, you know what I mean? No rhythm whatsoever. We are a sanctuary city, yeah. That was the mindset of all these cities across America because they never thought the problem would reach them. In fact, Eric Adams, the mayor of New York City, earlier this week, called the mayor of Texas, Greg Abbott, a crazy person. You know, so that crazy person sends people from Texas. In their mind, only border states should have to deal with illegal immigrants. That's it. Only border states. And they shouldn't have the right to tell them they can't come here. Because, let's face it, no human's legal. They're migrants. They're on a very desperate journey. Those states should take them in. But if those states send them to their cities, then the mayors and the people freak out, like Eric Adams is doing. Freaking, or in the same thing with they sent to Martha's Vineyard. I mean, I thought that was brilliant when DeSantis sent a plane load of illegal immigrants to Martha's Vineyard. You know, and Buffy and Chad are sitting there trying to enjoy their lobster roll, and all of a sudden they look over and there's a bunch of migrants walking down the street. And they, you know, they're all for it on social media. They'll virtue signal with all the right things, but you know, they don't really want them next to their whale pants. You know what I mean? So they were gone the next day, out of there. But the outrage was palpable, right? They don't really want you. You know what? I'll give you the example. It's like, you ever have somebody who just pops over to your house? I'm a big believer in never do the pop-in. You always got to give people notice before you show up at their house. Even if people tell you, come, just like, drop in anytime. All right, drop in anytime you want. Just come on over. Nobody really means that. It's just an expression. You know, but if somebody one day just shows up at your door and you're not prepared for it, then all of a sudden you turn around and go, and my parents did that a long time ago when my son was born. He's 9 now, but they just showed up one night. But my wife was away, and I ordered Chinese food, and I was getting ready to watch a movie and opened up a bottle of wine. I was ready. And, you know, my son finally fell asleep, and then my parents showed up. I went, "What are you doing?" They said, "Well, you have a sign in your house that says, you know, come at night, come at early." Come. I go, it's a cheap sign we got at Home Goods. I don't really mean that. But that's my parents, and nobody ever wants their parents to drop in, obviously. But that's exactly what I mean about the illegal immigrant crisis. They have signs, no humans illegal, and they don't really want them to drop in. They don't really want them to come. And the people are furious right now. Yesterday, there was a woman in New York City who was going on and on about, and she's dropping all kinds of F-bombs and everything else about the problem because they're taking over schools. And in New Jersey, they wanted to house illegal immigrants at Atlantic City Airport. The governor of New Jersey, Phil Murphy, said no. I mean, he has no authority to say no. It's a federal, the airport's controlled by the feds. But he said no because he wants to run for president. Gavin Newsom is sending National Guard troops down to the border in California. You know, when Greg Abbott does it, they lose their mind. But Gavin Newsom does it. He goes, "Oh, we're trying to stop the flow of fentanyl into California." Gavin Newsom's getting ready to run for president, 100%. There's not even a question in my mind about that. But all these people who are coming into the country illegally, they are bringing fentanyl, no question about it, because the fentanyl is cooked up in China. It's brought to Mexico. The cartels, they make it, they assemble it, and they bring it over the border, and then they rent a bunch of Airbnbs in California, and from there, it's a nationwide network. And it was the far-right-wing Washington Post that did that analysis. So it's absolutely coming through the country, no question about it, from the southern border. But also terrorists are too. Growing number of people on the U.S. terrorist watch list encountered at the border, according to DHS. Approximately 160 non-U.S. citizens on the watch list attempted to cross into the United States in 2023, most of whom were encountered attempting to illegally enter between ports of entry. That means illegal. Crossing the border. When you say somebody is an illegal immigrant, of course they're not. No human is illegal, but their status is illegal. Duh, obviously. The Department of Homeland Security said in its annual Homeland Threat Assessment, that is an increase from 2022, when border officials encountered roughly 100 individuals on the terror watch list attempting to enter the country. We expect continued high numbers of migrant encounters over the next year because traditional drivers of migration to the United States remain unchanged and frustration with waiting for legal migration pathways may grow, the report said. Terrorists and criminal actors may exploit the elevated flow and increasingly complex security environment to enter the United States. Translation, it's impossible to get here nowadays flying in on an airplane. Like the good old days. Now they got facial recognition scanners. They got all kinds of things. You're not going to make it in through an actual port of entry. So if your goal is to get in the United States of America and commit terrorism, don't do it through a port of entry. The technology there is too good these days. I mean, just assume the minute you walk into an airport nowadays, they've already begun looking at your face and doing all the things and profiling you and scanning you and seeing who you are. And that's what happens. So if somebody's on the terror watch list, their face is probably in the database and a big alarm goes off, or it goes off when they hand their passport over or whatever. They know, I mean, if they're using the name on the watch list or their face is in the database, that technology is going to call them out right away. So because of that, they know, well, we'll just cross in the border. We'll just come in through what's, you know, why risk getting caught at a U.S. port of entry and being shipped to Gitmo or wherever they send people nowadays when you can just cross illegally over the border? That's what's happening. I mean, that's from the report by Department of Homeland Security. Terrorists and criminal actors may exploit the elevated flow and increasingly complex security environment to enter the United States. And I love how the report, too, blames the frustration with waiting for legal migration pathways. So you see, it's not the fault of the people who are coming into the country illegally. They're frustrated, and they're sick of waiting for legal migration pathways. So it's not, you know what I mean? You got to give them a pass here. They're just frustrated. If only they would have legal migration pathways, all of this problem would go away. It's not that the border is not secure. It's not that the Biden administration and Alejandro Mayorkas, who's completely incompetent, it's not that they're not doing their job. It's just that there's growing frustration. That's all it is. A Homeland Security official told reporters on Thursday that every individual encountered at the border faces biometric and biographic screening and vetting. Additionally, the official noted, Customs and Border Protection has expanded information sharing agreements with international partners to enhance their ability to prevent, detect, and investigate trafficking and other crimes. Quote, encounters of known or suspected terrorists attempting to cross the southern border are uncommon. These encounters represent significantly less than 0.01% of total encounters per fiscal year in recent years. These encounters may include individuals who are not known or suspected terrorists, such as encounters with family members. But that's the people you know about, right? That's the people you know about. How about all the people you don't know about? Well, you can't know what you don't know. So all you can do is report the ones that you caught. But the ones that got away, as they say, you have no idea. We are admitting, though, the fact that they are coming in illegally. You're admitting that, and you're saying the number's growing. So if you can assume that the Department of Homeland Security is suggesting the terrorists want to use the migrant crisis as an opportunity to cross into the United States of America, and they've caught 160, let's say 50 others got away. I think, a pretty conservative number. But let's say it's 50, right? 50 other people on the terrorist watch list got away. Or 5. Or 19, since there were 19 hijackers on 9/11. The 20th guy got caught. But so Homeland Security is acknowledging the problem, but they don't want to fix anything about the problem because the border is also Homeland Security. Individuals on the terrorist screening data set, also known as the terror watch list, may be included because they are known associations with watchlisted individuals, such as family members, or because they are directly engaged in terrorist activity. Quote, this is a feature of the broader global migration trends we are seeing, and those trends cause many people in conflict zones around the world to seek to migrate to the Western Hemisphere and ultimately to the United States. The report also forecasts that the threat of domestic terrorism would remain high but unchanged entering 2024, and that the primary threat to American lives would remain illicit drugs produced and imported from Mexico. Well, those illicit drugs are also coming in across the border. So, I mean, just imagine, you know, the next fight that we're dealing with here, you know, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, whoever, would they waste their time sending their people on an airplane when they could just load them onto a ship, you know, send them across to Mexico and then get them across and have people crossing the border legally? Obviously, this is what they're going to do. And DHS knows this. They're saying this now. The technology's gotten so good at identifying people, and like any time there's something, you'll find a black market for it. So getting into the country then, to avoid all that technology, just jump on the roof of a train that's entering Texas from Mexico. And instead of dealing with the problem, Homeland Security goes, well, they're frustrated. They're just frustrated. Well, you know who else is frustrated? The people in New York City and the cities where illegal immigrants are being sent. Because it should not just be a responsibility for the border states to deal with. And they're not crazy for sending them and saying, hey, we all got to share the wealth here, all right? And we all got to share the responsibility. It's not just Texans who have to feed and clothe and house. You got to handle it too, especially because you advocated the policies that led them here. This is the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. We're coming right back.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Yeah, I tell you, just watching this, the coverage of this event in New York City, and all the people getting drowned out. Also, Jerry Nadler, the penguin, the waddler, he got drowned out too by people who were screaming, close the border. People in New York City are sick and tired of it. They really are. They're very sick and tired of it. Chaos at this New York City event on migrant crisis. And I think it's very, very interesting too, what this guy says on the streets of New York City. Fox News goes up to him and starts to interview him. They're nervous he's going to drop F-bombs, but I don't believe he does. So we're good, but take a listen.
I had to spend hundreds of dollars to get their school supplies. They're coming here not vaccinated. We just had a COVID crisis. They shut our businesses down.
Yes.
They fired teachers, fire department.
for not getting vaccinated.
Who do you think needs to do more? We hear from the mayor of New York, who says he's doing everything he can every day as migrants continue to come in. We are. I will say, too, we're live on air. But, you know, what do you think about what the mayor's doing and what should the president and the White House be doing?
This is up to us. This is up to each and every one of us to stand up. Nobody's coming here for us.
Right.
We're here for ourselves. Yep. If we don't get up and fight for our city, nobody's coming for us. They're coming to destroy it. The reason why they're here is to steal our votes.
Right.
We're not going to be able to live. They're stealing our votes, our kids' future, my birthright, our United States, this great city that I refuse to leave. Do you understand? Nobody's coming for us. These elected officials aren't even elected. They're using absentee ballots. They're being selected.
And they're operating without...
What did you think that AOC...
All right, so you can see, I mean, there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of anger that's happening right now. But remember something. These cities, they wanted this. Here is Mayor Karen Bass. Karen Bass, another one who's an open borders kind of mayor. Very fearful that any day now in Los Angeles, any day now, migrants could be here. Take a listen.
What they're trying to do is destabilize cities because it's Chicago, it's Washington, D.C., it's New York. It's the narrative that these are Democratic-run cities and that we don't know how to govern and that everything is chaotic here. We live in a city that welcomes immigrants. And so I think we have been able to handle it. But I am fearful that any day planes could start coming.
Yeah, well, because that's right, any day. And here's the thing. We had Section 42, right? That order which would prevent people from coming into the country illegally based on the fact that we were in the middle of a pandemic, Title 42. They did away with that. If you remember, the Biden administration challenged it. They didn't want to enforce it. At the very same time, they were using the pandemic to argue in court that we needed to forgive student loans, billions and billions and billions of dollars, because of the fact that we were in the middle of a pandemic. But at the border, they wanted Title 42 to go away, and they said no pandemic. The guy's point about people coming over the border not being vaccinated is valid. The CDC is now recommending COVID boosters for everyone 6 months and older. They're saying the virus is still here. If the virus is still here, then why are we having a wide open border if the virus is still here and there's other variants and you're worried about what other variants could potentially do? That makes no sense. I don't want to hear another thing about boosters and masks and everything else. If you know that we could have another public health emergency in this country, that there could be other variants, and you've got a wide open border and you refuse to reinstate Title 42 to deal with that, which gave people the ability to send people home based on a public health emergency. And what that guy said in that interview when he said people are coming here, they're not vaccinated, it's true. What else are they not vaccinated for? What other diseases are they bringing into our country? It's a legitimate question. I'm tired of listening to people go on and on about the return of COVID. You know, you may be over COVID, but COVID's not over you. And at the very same time, you've got this mass the immigration crisis happening on the southern border. Give me a break. Give me a break. All right. We got a big 1 o'clock hour coming up here on the Dana Show. We're going to get into Hunter Biden a little bit more. What does Donald Trump think of the charges against Hunter Biden? By the way, he's going to be the first guest of the new Meet the Press host, Kristen Welker. Why would NBC News take such a vile man and put him on their inaugural episode with the new host? We're coming right back. So the charges against Hunter Biden, the big question now is, does Joe run? And if he does run, does he keep Kamala Harris as his running mate? Welcome back to the Dana Show. It is me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana today. Glad you're here. I'm from her affiliate, WPHD, in Philadelphia, where I do the afternoon drive show every day from 3 to 7 p.m. Kamala Harris is terrible, but the Democrats have a Kamala Harris problem. And here's what I mean by that. She's obviously the first black woman vice president, and that matters a lot to the left, as you know. It's because it's not about how good you are at your job. It's about whatever boxes you check, and they only look at people as what box you check, and everybody's a box, you know? Everybody's a box. She's not popular. People don't want her to run. And when you go out and you ask voters, you say to them, hey, listen, do you want Joe Biden? You got 67% of Democrats saying, no, we want somebody else. You got David Ignatius, the Washington Post, running column going, Joe Biden's too old. You got Morning Joe going, Mika, it's not 99%, Mika, it's 100% of the Democrats I talk to say Joe Biden is too old. Then when you ask people, what about Kamala Harris? They all say the same thing. I don't feel comfortable if she becomes president. And she would definitely become president if Joe Biden gets a second term. Joe Biden's not going to last 4 years. He may not make it to next year. But this is their problem. Because if he steps aside, how does it not go to Kamala Harris? How does the party not rally around her? But if they do, they have a problem because she's a terrible candidate. I mean, Gavin Newsom, for everything that I despise about the man, he's a tyrant, he's an authoritarian, he's a good politician. He's a good politician, and he's smart, and he's savvy, and he knows how he has to. He's very much like Bill Clinton in that sense. He'll be whatever he has to be, like a chameleon. And he'll change his positions like that. He's already apologizing for COVID, how he handled COVID, and going on about how he would do things differently now if he could. And, you know, I mean, the guy destroyed businesses. But he's pragmatic. For example, Governor Gavin Newsom had a travel ban to red states. Any red state that he viewed as having an anti-LGBTQIA++, every letter of the alphabet legislation, he banned travel to their state travel. 26 states. 26 states. In March, the wannabe Democrat candidate for president announced that $10 million had been set aside for his Campaign for Democracy tour, which would take him to several red states to which state-funded travel was banned. So he can see firsthand the horrors of conservative America, as Twitchy puts it. The first stop was Florida, which Governor Ron DeSantis said Gavin Newsom was obsessed with. Having broken his own rule, Newsom is now giving up on the red state travel ban as it didn't have any effect anyway. California Senate Bill 447, also known as the Bridge Project, officially repeals a 2016 law that prohibited the state from sponsoring travel to states with laws in place that discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. At the time of the Bridge Project's passing, the number of states subject to California's ban was an unprecedented 26, preventing state workers, including university professors and elected officials, from visiting more than half the country on state-sponsored trips. The new law, which is effective immediately, replaces the travel prohibition with an outreach campaign that encourages LGBTQ acceptance and inclusivity in red states, where a majority of anti-LGBTQ laws were filed and passed this year. In the face of a rising tide of anti-LGBTQ plus hate, this measure helps California's message of acceptance, equality, and hope reach the places where it is most needed, the governor said in a Wednesday news release. It also helps him reach the states where he needs to campaign if he wants to run for president. So there's that. But you see, Gavin Newsom will be whatever he has to be to get the job. Kamala Harris is not popular, not well-liked, but what do you do? You're gonna shove aside the first black woman vice president for another white guy? Remember, this is how Democrats think. This is the identity politics game. This is how they think. They don't view people as people. They don't think, well, you know, he's a stronger candidate. But to them, it should be just another straight. What are the terms they use? And my buddy always gets mad when I use this, but they call it, I think, cisgender or some nonsense like that. I forget. Anyway, but it'll be another straight white male the party chooses, just like it did with Joe Biden, over the first black woman vice president. That's the problem they have. And when you ask Democrats, well, should Kamala Harris be it? Nancy Pelosi dodged the question the other night. Jamie Raskin was asked flat out by Jake Tapper several times, do you think Kamala Harris is the best running mate for President Joe Biden? It's a yes or no question. Democrat Congressman Jamie Raskin, who's always a guy who speaks his mind about everything, can't give a simple yes or no question to whether or not Kamala Harris is the best running mate for President Biden. This is what he said. Cut 12.
It's not a, no one's making it about personalities. I mean, like, it's just a simple question. Do you think Kamala Harris is the best running mate for President Biden? You've said she's excellent. That's farther than Speaker Pelosi went. But do you think she's the I'm not trying to throw anything into turmoil. I actually think it's a pretty simple question. Do you think Kamala Harris is the best running mate for President Biden? Yes or no?
I mean, I don't know what else I can say other than she would be an excellent running mate and an excellent vice president.
You can say yes.
I don't know whether President Biden has named his running mate. We're going to a convention next summer. It's a year away from now. And we're going to go through that process. So,
I mean, you say, I don't know why you can say, the answer is you could say yes. You could say yes. I think Kamala Harris is the best vice president and the best running mate for President Biden. That's the answer you could be giving right now. Yes, she is.
So I've not seen any public opinion polling. You might be a stronger vice presidential running mate than her or me or anybody else. I don't know who else, if you're talking about the polling,
so
but I will
bad.
Tell you as a matter of substance.
So bad. It's so bad. I mean, come on. You know what a big holdup, by the way, with saying why? I mean, that guy right there cannot say what is the truth. When you go to voters, even if you don't change Biden, even if Biden still runs, people do not have confidence that Joe Biden will finish a second term, and they don't want Kamala Harris as the backup plan. So the smart thing for Democrats, of course, would be to drop her off the ticket. But again, it's Kamala Harris' problem. Are you gonna drop the first black woman from the ticket? And then who do you put in her place? You know, the speculation out there, there's all these rumors out there that if they were to ever make a change, they wouldn't go with Gavin Newsom. They'd go with somebody like a Michelle Obama, because then you solve that problem of just glossing over and throwing out the first black woman. But I don't know if she actually is interested in that. She tells everybody she's not. And Newsom is chomping at the bit. I mean, the guy is everywhere. You know, he sits down with Sean Hannity, does an hour-long interview, challenges Governor DeSantis to a debate, but says, you know, we can't work out the timing of it. He does not want to go one-on-one against DeSantis when it comes to the whole idea about whose state fared better during the pandemic and whose state has fared better overall and all of it. You know what I mean? All of it. He doesn't want to have to do that side-by-side comparison. It'd be fantastic if DeSantis were the nominee for him to be able to say, if Gavin Newsom was the Democrat nominee, just look at our records. Just look at the states and look at the records and look at crime and look at the economy and look at jobs and look at all of it. Side by side. An apples to apples comparison of two states, two governors, both want the White House, both of their records on display for you to evaluate. But as of right now, Trump is the front runner. DeSantis may not be the Republican nominee. And what the Democrats are very fearful of is that in a rematch against Trump, Joe Biden can't claim to be the sweet old guy who's going to heal America and bring America back together again. Now it's the guy who's clueless and can't figure out where he is. He doesn't know where he is. Here, and says very racist things, for example. Like this comment he made yesterday about people without high school diplomas cut five.
We not only recovered all the jobs we lost during the pandemic, we've added millions more. We've seen record lows in unemployment, particularly, and I've focused on this my whole career, particularly for African Americans and Hispanic workers and veterans. You know, the workers without high school diplomas, the lowest unemployment rate in 70 years for women now.
Mm-hmm. So particularly African-Americans and Hispanic workers, you know, the workers without high school diplomas. The stuff this guy gets away with saying is just amazing. But now he's got the corruption problem, right? He's got the corruption problem. He's got the economy problem. Gas prices are going. Biden says he's going to get, he does the creepy whisper, you know, the serial killer thing that he does sometimes. He does a lot of that. But he also talked about gas prices. But let's start with cut eight, please.
I'm going to get those gas prices down again, I promise you.
Thank you.
Are you? How are you going to do that? Just out of curiosity, you going to tap the Strategic Petroleum Reserve again, Mr. President? Do a little gimmick right before the election? Huh? You see, he sold out American energy independence. Now you got this auto worker strike. You know what a big sticking point is with the auto worker strike? Is the fact that workers are losing their jobs because of this transition to EVs. And what the focus is right now, and what Congressman Ro Khanna of California just said a short time ago, is their priority right now is protecting the workers who make the batteries more than it is about protecting the people that make the cars. He says EVs may mean fewer auto jobs. Protection for battery workers is a main sticking point in the talks. A lot of EV subsidies going where workers are not represented. and CEOs are making tons. So this, all of this, this whole transition to electric vehicles that's happening right now, this whole transition that blue states like mine in New Jersey and California and others, where they're forcing people to buy electric vehicles and they're trying to take them away, literally saying to people, you cannot buy a gas-powered vehicle. You're not allowed to buy a gas-powered vehicle. You only can buy an electric vehicle. That's a big part of the problem that is happening right now. EVs may mean fewer auto jobs, and that's another problem. So even if you keep Kamala Harris on the ticket, you've got a problem because voters don't want her. If you keep Joe Biden on the ticket, you've got a problem because voters don't want him. And if you try to replace Kamala Harris, you've got a problem, because if you do that, then the problem is you're going to have the same Kamala Harris problem. It's a real bad problem for the Democrats. This is the Dana Show. We are just hammered away right now. We got a lot to talk about. It's a busy Friday. Don't you remember when Fridays weren't that busy? I know, but these days, these days, they're very, very busy. It's Rich Zeoli in for Dana. We're coming right back.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
I'm guessing, I think I know what Dana's talking about in her tweet she just put out a short time ago. Why is it so difficult for politicians and operatives to keep it in their pants? I think I know what she's referring to, but anyway. Welcome back to The Dana Show. It's great to be with you this afternoon. We got a lot to chat about. There's rumors out there circulating in the political, because the Daily Mail published a story about South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem and former Trump advisor Corey Lewandowski, that they've been having a clandestine affair for several years. Now, I don't know if it's true, but that story's out there and it's making a lot of news. And the governor's office today came out and said, give me a break. All right. This happens after she endorsed Trump and is a potential Trump VP pick. So see where that story goes. But it's time for us to do five things. Let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Governor Rick Perry of Texas, former Governor Rick Perry of Texas, had said psychedelics are medicines that were taken away for political purposes. The former Texas governor spoke with Reason's Nick Gillespie at the Psychedelic Science 2023 conference in Denver. He says he's not in favor of legalizing all drugs, but in the last 5 years, he has warmed up to the idea that psychedelics could be a valuable and legitimate treatment for trauma. Talking about things like mushrooms, LSD, and other things like that, psychedelic-assisted therapy can help. He says his twin brother, he talks about a story of Marcus Luttrell and Morgan Luttrell, who worked with him at the Department of Energy. Marcus lived with us in the governor's mansion as my wife and I were learning about post-traumatic stress disorder and how poorly our government was dealing with this. We tried to find solutions to help heal this young man. And psychedelics may help veterans and other people get over the anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, suicidal thoughts of PTSD. But obviously, you know, Big Pharma is not going to be happy about that, because those they'll compete with all those pills, those lovely, lovely pills. NASA says they're appointing a new czar, you know, a new UFO czar. They're saying that these unidentified flying objects, although they have a new nickname for it now, a new three-letter acronym, they're not extraterrestrial, but they don't know what they are. So now NASA is going to have a new czar to look into these unidentified aerial phenomenons, UAPs, which they say are not alien, but they don't know what they are. So sleep well, you know, sleep comfortably at night. We don't know what they are. So that actually scares me even more, because I think the aliens at least would come in peace. Speaking of aliens, in Mexico, they revealed the corpses, the mummified corpses of aliens. Everybody looked at that and said, this doesn't look anything remotely real. I think it's interesting NASA's timing on this announcement after the big story of the alien corpses were the mummified corpses, of course. I'll tell you something else, too. I think when you think about the notion of bag bans, Where you live, you probably don't have to worry about this nonsense. But where I live, plastic and paper bags are both illegal. Well, a new poll came out that said the majority of people do not want bans on paper bags. Because I always go into a store and I forget mine and have to buy more. And guess what you buy? Reusable plastic bags. But there's more plastic that goes into the production of these things. And people are saying enough is enough. And with that, I should also let you know that a number of people have pointed something out when it comes to climate change. That with all the nonsense we hear from the left about climate change over and over and over again, it seems like when it comes to climate change, the left doesn't seem to care about the destruction caused by things like offshore wind turbines, whales, and dolphins. Well, Exxon tried to protect its fossil fuel business by downplaying climate change. And guess what? The Biden Justice Department now wants to go after Exxon for that. Shameful what the Justice Department wants to do. This is The Dana Show, coming right back.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
So I mentioned to you that Biden is one of the most, he says the most racist things. That clip he said before about, particularly for African Americans and Hispanic workers, you know, the workers without high school diplomas. Well, according to the New York Post, they're trying to clean it up now in the official transcript. This has been quite the week of the White House telling the media what to do and then trying to change reality. You remember how they came out earlier this week with a memo telling the corporate media in this country, here's what you need to say regarding impeachment. Here is what you need to say. And they went on and on about that. Well, of course, the media dutifully followed the commandments and said everything they were told to say by the White House. Well, now they're trying to clean this up again. So the clip, which we played for you, we've seen record lows in unemployment, particularly, and I focused on this my whole career, particularly for African-Americans and Hispanic workers and veterans, you know, the workers without high school diplomas. According to the transcript released by the White House, there was supposed to be the word "and" separating the African-American, comma, Hispanic workers and veterans from those without high school diplomas. So then the speech would have read the following, quote, we've seen record lows in unemployment, particularly, and I've focused on this my whole career, particularly for African Americans and Hispanic workers and veterans, you know, and the workers without high school diplomas. But Biden jumbled it all together because he can't read anymore. Well, he can't. I mean, let's face it. All the guy does is go out there and read off a teleprompter and then walk away. He won't take questions, and then when he tries to take questions, he gets in trouble, so they tell him he can't take questions. I mean, that's what he said. I mean, he admitted that. Yes, he admitted that yesterday or the day before. I don't know. We got it here. Cut number three.
Let me close with this, and there's a lot more I know we could talk about. I wish I had a chance to take all your questions, but I'm going to get in real trouble if I do that.
Yeah, and so, and then when the other day, they just interrupted him flat out. He's answering a question. He's going on about third world countries. And they go, all right, everybody, thank you. And then play the music and, you know, get the old codger off the stage. Like he's giving an Academy Awards acceptance speech, and he's gone on too long with his Lifetime Achievement Award. A clip of the slip-up was shared on Twitter. What an embarrassment, person said. This is incredibly sad, and it's also infuriating. And others blasted the commander-in-chief as racist. Let's hear it one more time. And so now you know the context of what he was supposed to say. And you can hear it again with that little context now. Cut five, please.
We not only recovered all the jobs we lost during the pandemic, we've added millions more. We've seen record lows in unemployment, particularly, and I've focused on this my whole career, particularly for African-Americans and Hispanic workers and veterans. You know, the workers without high school diplomas, the lowest unemployment rate in 70 years for women now.
Mm-hmm. So he messed that up because he can't read and it sounded terrible. It's just, you know, I mean, but it's just Joe. It's Uncle Joe. But even with everything going on for the president of the United States right now, for everything going on, it still comes down to the economy. They did a poll recently asking people about Hunter Biden, and everybody thinks Joe Biden's corrupt. But what concerns them more, even with Hunter Biden, what concerns them more is the fact that the economy stinks. And if it is a two-man race between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, it becomes a referendum on Biden. But then people can look fondly in the rearview mirror and remember what the economy was like under Trump. If it becomes Ron DeSantis versus Joe Biden, he can go on and on about Florida's economic record while people think about how bad things have gotten under Joe Biden's presidency. If it's Biden versus Trump, which it's looking like it's going to be based on at least the polls today, well, it's a choice. Biden acknowledges the choice, right? I mean, it's a choice. Cut 10.
They should know the choice between Bidenomics and MAGAnomics.
Bidenomics and MAGAnomics. Who do you think, if you had to choose Bidenomics or MAGAnomics, what would you pick? When MAGAnomics was around, MAGAnomics seemed to help a lot of people. Bidenomics, not so much. And that's the problem. You know, they love the throw MAGA out there with everything. But if you're going to make it a choice between MAGAnomics, which sounds like a bad party game, or Bidenomics, I think people would choose MAGAnomics. At least to play at parties anyway. At least that. And he's back with the creepy whisper. He's back with the creepy whisper now about Bidenomics. Oh, it's just always creepy when I hear this. It's like the guy in the house calling the babysitter and letting the babysitter know he's upstairs in the bathroom. Cut 9.
The new economic vision has been labeled by those in the Wall Street Journal and the London Economist and some of the more conservative press as Bidenomics. Well, they didn't mean it as a compliment at first. But now they're getting it.
What are you wearing? I'm in the house. I'm in the third floor. This is creepy. It always comes down to the economy. Stupid. It's the economy, stupid. I mean, that's the issue right there. That's the issue. And I am telling you right now that if things continue along this track, economically speaking, we're going to run into some real problems. My buddy E.J. Antoni, who is an economist at the Heritage Foundation, and he's really, really good with this stuff, he points out that if you look at the way inflation is going right now, and you look at this kind of the curve of everything, I think you feel this in your life every single day. You feel this in your life every single day. Industrial production and capacity utilization improved in August, but manufacturing production remains lower. August imports and exports had the biggest monthly jump in prices since May of 2022. Fuel imports accounted for entire price increase on that side of the ledger. Non-agricultural exports accounted for the entire export price jumps. So in other words, we are paying more for everything that we are bringing into this country, and what's going out of the country is going down in price. That's not good. These are not good indicators. See, if you look at the indicators and you try to peek into the future and you look at all that, you say to yourself, this doesn't look good. So now we come to Hunter Biden, right? Come to Hunter Biden. And the question now of how bad this is for Joe Biden, how bad it is. Well, number one, it's a slap on the wrist. And I think that that's deliberate. I do. As I told you at the start of the show today, if they wanted to throw the tax charges at Hunter Biden, they could have. If they wanted to go after him for failing to register as a foreign agent, they could have. Maybe they will. But at least insofar as this, it's still a slap on the wrist. There's a picture on the front cover of the New York Post today of Hunter Biden holding a semi-automatic pistol. He's got it. He's got his hand on the trigger and the pistol's cocked. There's no mention of that charge, of him having that gun. That's not there in the charges. The whole thing's a slap on the wrist, but I do think that's deliberate. I really do. I think it's deliberate. It's a message. You know, you be good, Mr. President, and get the hell out of here, and we don't have to continue coming after him. But if you stay and you push back on the managerial class, we've got a whole lot more we can come and bring to the table. That's the problem. But they're trying to say it's a two-tier justice system. A two-tiered justice system. Is that not hilarious? After everything we've seen with former President Donald Trump, we're supposed to believe right now that Hunter Biden is dealing with a two-tiered justice system. The guy who got the greatest sweetheart deal in the history of sweetheart deals. All he had to do that day in court was just say yes. And he would have been given immunity for everything. Almost everything. Almost. But he's so dumb, he didn't say yes, and so they rejected the plea agreement, which was, it was so beautiful for him and so beneficial to Hunter Biden. It was as if the United States Department of Justice literally wrote it for him, that they wrote it for his attorneys. But yet somehow we're supposed to believe the little slap on the wrist here with these three gun charges is somehow this two-tiered justice system, cut 13.
They are. I've never heard of this charge being brought. I understand it is occasionally brought here and there. But in the discretion, you know, I was in the Southern District of New York. We looked for felons who were in possession of guns. We did not look for people who were subject to substance abuse for 11 days in the possession of a gun. So this is unusual. And when you hear of the two-tiered justice system, I would argue that Hunter Biden is getting the worst of it because his last name is Biden, not the other way around.
So you think he's getting the worst of it because his last name is Biden? The Biden Justice Department, which is going to give him the most amazing sweetheart deal ever, and now we're turning around and saying two-tier justice system? Seriously? Really, man? You know, I think when people hear this, they get very, very frustrated. I have a theory about politicians. I think most people think all politicians are corrupt. I really do. I think they think most politicians, not all, but most, are corrupt. But they're okay with it as long as, I mean, look at it this way, right? How is it so many people like Joe Biden, they make $175,000 a year as a member of Congress, which is good money, don't get me wrong, but they wind up then being worth $30, $50 million. Insider trading and deals, Harry Truman once said, show me a rich politician, I'll show you a crook. How is it that these people make so much money? And we're willing to a degree to put up with it as long as the economy's strong. If the economy's not strong, though, that's when people turn around and say, enough is enough. The problem for Joe Biden is when you're trying to relate to the American worker and people think you got rich off of your office and you helped your idiot son get rich because of your office and you enrich yourself while making things harder on my family, that's when people get really, really angry. And what's happening right now is that Joe Biden is making you pay more for gas, an extra $2,400 on your annual energy bill. Yes, that's right. Everything that Joe Biden has done to throttle the energy sector is costing American families an extra $2,400 on their energy bill. So if you want to talk about Bidenomics versus Maganomics, ask people that. And then ask them the question. Okay, you hate Donald Trump's tweets. You think he's vile. You think he's hideous, whatever it is. But if the choice is Bidenomics versus Maganomics, and now you're paying an extra $2,400 just in energy costs alone, forget school supplies, forget everything else you're paying more on, and you haven't gotten a raise, and inflation is costing you more, it's the hidden tax, choose Maganomics, Bidenomics. If that's the way they want to set this choice up, I think that they are going to run straight into a wall here. Remember, on his first day in office, day number one, Joe Biden goes in there and cancels the Keystone XL pipeline. And he issued what was supposed to be a temporary moratorium on all oil and natural gas activities in Anwar. Now he has canceled all leases and permits there, closing off one of the nation's most energy-rich areas. It's a very unwise maneuver, but this also happened after the administration banned shipping liquefied natural gas by rail and by blocking the transport of domestic natural gas via additional pipelines and new railroads. Take, for example, natural gas transfer stations, right? Liquid natural gas transfer stations, which could be fantastic. You could export this. America could lead the world. You really wanted to feed Vladimir Putin? Instead of giving Ukraine $120 billion with no accountability whatsoever, and meanwhile, you are stifling America's energy export ability while Putin cashes in. America could be leading the world in the export of liquefied natural gas. Leading the world in liquefied natural gas. But every time you talk about how to achieve that, you run into a major, major headwind. And that is that you can't transport it by rail, can't do new pipelines, can't do new transfer stations. And 80% of the world derives their fossil fuel-based chemical feedstocks from crude oil. America gets 80% of its feedstocks from its abundant reserves of inexpensive, clean, natural gas. This gives American industry about a 70% cost savings on feedstocks, which are passed on to consumers on countless items. But if you hamstring the transportation of inexpensive natural gas, guess what? That means that it's going to cost more for feedstocks, it's going to cost more for everything. Diesel, gasoline, all of it. And then guess who pays that? You do. These costs get passed on to you. All of it, amounts to about $2,400 more in energy today than when Joe Biden took office. So if it's a referendum on Bidenomics versus MAGAnomics, just look at the math. Do the math. Look at the numbers. It's not that complicated. This is The Dana Show. We got a lot more to talk about. Don't go away.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
The National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, by the way, is getting briefed on the United States giving more money to Ukraine. More money. Yes, it's a never-ending spiral of money, but at the very same time, our policy is enriching Vladimir Putin, which is very frustrating. And the state of Florida has just sued the Biden administration over a memo that appears to show border officials secretly releasing immigrants into the U.S. on a quota basis. That legal action was filed today by Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody. And I just saw Governor DeSantis was on Fox News being interviewed about it a short time ago. So we'll talk more about that. But since I've brought up Florida, I guess this is the perfect time here on The Dana Show to talk about, you know.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
You know, we got some real real Mensa candidates here, no question about it. These guys are splitting the atom. So first of all, a drunk Florida man was arrested for punching a window because he was mad at a woman. So he punched a woman. His name is Brandon Gracco, 32 years old, charged with damaging property. The police responded to a home after a woman who said her child's father, later identified as the guy, punched her window and broke it. The window was valued at $350. I feel like punching a window is never a good move because the guy had cuts all over his wrist consistent with punching a window and blood all over his shirt. So they found him lying under a bush on the opposite side of the home's fence. And this is going to shock you, but he was drunk and mad. And so he punched through the window. It was probably not double pane glass and probably wasn't very energy efficient anyway. So, you know, if you get it replaced, probably not the end of the world. This guy was clocked going 80 miles an hour in a 45 with several empty Bud Light cans in the car. Now, my question is, why is he still drinking Bud Light after Dylan Mulvaney? That's the biggest part of this that is shocking to me. Travis Pellico, arrested and booked into the Madison County Jail Marion County Jail after the traffic stop in Ocala early Monday morning. The 33-year-old was stopped about 2 miles away from his home by a deputy who observed him swerving several times, not stopping at stop signs, and even driving 80 in a 45. I mean, can you, that's a lot. That's a big, I'm no math guy, but that's almost double. The deputy said his white truck entered the lane, nearly striking the patrol car too. He was unsteady on his feet as he got out of the car, and a whole bunch of Bud Light cans came out of the car and rolled right onto the floor. And I would think that that's probably the reason why the guy got a ticket, because if you think about it, Bud Light is still incredibly offensive to all of us. Several empty beer cans in the back of the truck. The cooler was full with beer, too. This guy needs a better brand. Come on, man. What are you doing? You're the one guy still buying Bud Light? What's happening to you? And a Florida woman was eating a hamburger during a traffic stop for suspected DUI. Look, if you are drunk, you tend to get the munchies. You know what I mean? You tend to get the munchies, and that sort of happened. So she was eating a hamburger during a traffic stop for suspected DUI. She was just hungry. I don't know if you remember the time that it was a Paris Hilton. She got arrested for DUI, and she said at the time she just wanted to go to get an In-N-Out burger. The problem, though, she was a paid spokesperson for Carl's Jr. She had done that whole Carl's Jr. car wash ad that was all sexy, sudsy, and controversial. And then when she got busted, she said she was just trying to get an In-N-Out burger. So, you know, that's what it is. You get drunk and you just want a burger, you know. And a Florida man's $60,000 shopping spree ends with his arrest for bogus checks. $60,000. And his name is the best part of the story. Carson Quackenbush. Yep, Carson Quackenbush, arrested last month on several charges, including grand theft and fraud. He bought a $21,000 ATV with a check. Kind of feel like if a guy's going to do that, you probably want to get a backup ID or something like that. But anyway, true genius right there in Florida. All right, third and final hour on The Dana Show coming up. The White House, first briefing since Hunter Biden's indictment. Did they say anything? You'll find out straight ahead.
Just as the Treasury Department has released a report pointing out that the most comprehensive report ever dealing with how unions are good for both union workers and non-union workers and the overall economy. Unions raise workers' wages, they said, incomes, increase homeownership, increase retirement savings, increase access to critical benefits like sick leave and child care, and reduce inequality, all of which strengthen our economy for all workers. That's because unions raise standards across the workplaces and entire industries, pushing up wages and strengthening benefits for everyone. That's why strong unions are critical to a growing economy and growing it from the middle out, the bottom up, not the top down. That's especially true as we transition to a clean energy future, which we're in the process of doing. I believe that transition should be fair and a win-win for auto workers and auto companies.
It can't be, and it's not, and workers are going to get hosed here. Welcome back to the Dana Show. It's great to be with you. It's Rich Zeoli from Dana's affiliate, WPHD, in Philadelphia, where I do the afternoon drive show. You can reach me on X at Rich Zeoli, R-I-C-H-Z-E-O-L-I. Look, the issue here is EVs. This is the issue. The forced transition to EVs, not allowing the market to dictate this, but government policy to dictate this. You have states, blue states in the country right now, that are setting these arbitrary deadlines, 2035, where gas vehicles will no longer be allowed to be sold in the state. New Jersey's doing that, for example. California, a bunch of them are doing that. And Biden has said he wants every vehicle in the country to be an electric vehicle. The problem, though, is that there is a significant difference when it comes to building an EV to building a classic gas-powered American automobile. And then you also have the government subsidy problem that we have to talk about as well. I'll give an example right now. So the United Auto Workers, which is on strike right now, is asking for battery workers to be included in negotiations for better pay and labor standards. But manufacturers warn that this would make them uncompetitive with rivals such as Tesla. But batteries cost a lot of money, and they take less labor to make, meaning that manufacturers are likely to let go of workers in the coming year as they grow their production, which is not what the United Auto Workers wants. The UAW is pushing for sizable pay increases and the restoration of defined pension benefit pensions and retirement health benefits eliminated for new hires in 2007. It is also seeking to prevent the Michigan-based companies from using structures like joint ventures with foreign companies to put some EV battery factory workers on lower pay scales. If granted, this union objective would likely reduce the profitability of some legacy auto manufacturers' projects specifically linked to the industry's transformation, such as the GM joint venture that will run its planned Ultium EV battery cell plant in Lansing, Michigan. That means that, for example, Biden's pushing this green energy economy transition in the United States, trying to keep the unions happy, but you can't have both. Can't have both. Trump, in fact, just posted on his Truth Social a short time ago, the all-electric car is a disaster for both the United Auto Workers and the American consumer. They will be built in China. They are too expensive, don't go far enough, take too long to charge, and pose various dangers under certain economic atmospheric conditions. Good luck if one of those cars is in a flood zone. You saw that happen down in Florida, for example, where you got another hurricane potentially hitting the United States. And these cars get hit with salt water, and they're done. It's done. And they're also the chance for explosion. I mean, I'm not parking one in my house. No way. Not that I have one, but I wouldn't. He says, if this happens, United Auto Workers will be wiped out, along with all other auto workers in the United States. The all-electric car policy is about as dumb as open borders and no voter ID. It is a complete and total disaster. So what do you do now, Joe? What does union guy Joe do now? Does he side with the workers or does he side with the green energy kooks? That's the question. The green energy lunatics or the workers? The blue collar guys who build the cars or the squad and all the other people on the left who want to force a transition to EVs? Who does he side with? Now, I mean, if Joe Biden was a pragmatic guy who could actually think for himself, he would say, I'm going to stand with the workers. That makes more sense for my reelection chances. The problem is, he goes out there and reads from a teleprompter. He didn't even know what he's saying. So he talks about unions, but at the very same time, the people that are pulling the strings for him want to use him to push their green energy agenda. They don't think the guy's going to get a second term, so they want to try to ram it through now. That's very important to know. They want to try to ram it all through now, just in case the old codger does not get reelected. He's not going to. So if you think about it now, the guy who says, I'm from Scranton, I'm blue collar, I'm with you, I want to stand for the, I'd be the most union-friendly president ever, is literally forcing a transition to EVs that the American consumer does not want, that is going to cost them jobs, cost the manufacturers jobs. They won't need as many people to build electric cars. And eventually, when you get into the idea of where these batteries come from, the mining, the lithium, and everything else, and you get into the disposal of them, the whole thing's a freaking nightmare. But let's just focus on the jobs for a moment. You have a direct clash here between the goals of the left, the demands of the left. I mean, they're not even trying anymore, right, to hide it. They want everybody to know 100% that EVs and electric everything is the future, period. And when it comes to that, there's no negotiation. There's no compromise. Why the transition to electric cars looms large in UAW talks with the big three automakers, NPR. In a statement, the United Auto Workers have been carrying on signs lately saying every union, every auto job is a good job. And then the EV in one of the signs that they've been holding up lately is lit up in bright blue. It's a subtle sign that while the contract talks are over wages, benefits, quality of life, and job security, the auto industry's seismic transition to electric vehicles is interwoven into all these topics. Listen, NPR, it's not a seismic transition. It's a forced government mandated transition. If you allow the market to deal with this, people would not buy these cars. The only way they're even able to be built and manufactured and sold is because you have government subsidies involved. That's it. Take away the subsidies, take away the government getting involved, and this product fails. This product goes away. Nobody wants it. And you wouldn't need government subsidies if people did, right? I mean, you wouldn't need that. If people wanted this product, you would not have to have the government going in and mandating that people have to buy them. Name another product for me the government comes out and mandates that you have to buy. People, you need a car. People need cars. Got to get around. Got to get to work. Unless you live in a city and you can jump on public transportation, although I would not recommend it with the crime in cities right now in America. You need a car. You need an automobile. Name me another product where the government says you can't buy the one you want. You have to buy this one and only this one. I don't want to buy an EV. I want to buy a gas-powered automobile. Well, you can't. You're not allowed. We're not letting you. We're forcing you to buy something you don't want, but you need, but you don't want. There's no other product like it, and the government's forcing it, and this is the problem right now. Automakers are spurred in part by generous government tax credits are pouring billions of dollars into the development and production of EVs. And although EVs are not explicitly at the heart of the union negotiations, they are affecting them in all kinds of ways. Here's how. Both sides agree more EVs are coming. The debate is not whether automakers should transition to EVs. They are committed to rapidly scaling their production of electric vehicles in response to government and investor pressure to cut carbon emissions and slow climate change. I don't believe that it's investor pressure. I think investors want to do what's best for their bottom line. But it's the government forcing this. And then you get into the whole idea with these car companies have to deal with all of the social scores and the ESG scores and everything else. If they want financing, they have to move into this space, as they call it, environmental, social, and governance. The United Auto Workers Union is not trying to resist the transition, they say. We support a green economy. You know, we have to get behind this. We have to have a plant that we can live on, a planet we can have to live on, said UAW President Sean Fain at a virtual rally this past weekend. And this guy, this president, and I played you a little clip of him earlier today, he's a kook, the guy. He's a kook. He's a total lefty kook. And this is where people like him don't understand. You cannot have blue-collar workers cannot exist in a universe where lefty ideology wins the day. If you're somebody who believes that billionaires need to go away, if you're somebody who believes that we all need a healthy planet and everything else, and so we should sacrifice the free market to get there, you will ultimately end up paying the price. Blue collar, you want me to prove it to you? Just ask all the people that worked in coal in Pennsylvania. Ask all the coal miners in Virginia, West Virginia. Ask all the people that work on oil and natural gas. Ask all of them. They'll tell you. They'll tell you right away. But the problem is that for them is that a lot of these union people are, they're Marxist in their thinking. They are. They're Marxist in their thinking and their ideologies. And they're union members, the blue collar guys and gals who are looking for the best deal for their families. They need to understand that the policies that the union leadership is supporting is going to directly impact their ability to put food on the table. So this guy, this union president, said the transition made it more crucial that both assembly line workers and battery workers have pay, benefits, and guarantees as good as auto workers used to have. But the big three says the transition to EVs limits what they can offer. So the big three automakers in the United States argue that despite high profits, they cannot afford the union's demands because the high cost of the electric transition is why. Analysts say the automaker stance is not entirely incorrect. Quote, there is some truth to this, said Ed Kim, an analyst with Auto Pacific. Yes, they've been very profitable, but they're also at the same time very eager to reinvest those profits into their EV product development. Are they eager or are they being forced to? Because they can no longer build a product that the American consumer wants because the government's not going to let them sell it. So they have to make this transition. And if they don't make the transition, they're going to be out of business. And then everybody suffers. Everybody loses out on their jobs. So this is great. I mean, the good, you know, the big clash here between Union Joe and the guy from Scranton, who's not even really from Scranton, by the way, he lived there, he was like six. The union guy and the green energy kooks who are forcing this now and don't care if these guys lose their jobs, just like they don't care if it costs you $4.50 for a gallon of gas. They don't care. They want this transition. The green energy agenda is everything for them. It's what they built their stance on, and they're not going to give up. And what's going to happen is these union workers are going to pay a price. With an election coming, not good for them, not good for the Democrats, indeed, in places that are must-win places like Michigan, for example. This is The Dana Show. It's great to be with you. More to come straight ahead.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
I might say raised in the synagogues of my state. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. But back in Wilmington, Delaware, Beth Shalom was the home of countless friends for me.
So he's Jewish now. So president is Jewish as we start the beginning of Rosh Hashanah. Welcome back to The Dana Show. Glad you are here today on this busy Friday. I got a bunch of things to talk to you about, including what happened in Michigan. You remember the whole plot to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer? Remember that whole thing? These guys were going to kidnap her. Well, the last three of the defendants have been acquitted. And this thing stinks to high heaven with all kinds of FBI undercover informant operative connections. And I will get into that with you before our time together ends this afternoon. But I got five things to share with you now, so let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
You know, when we were kids, we had VCRs. And I loved having a VCR. Obviously, when we got the transition over to DVDs, that was a big deal. And then Blu-ray, remember? All these things are kind of ancient now. But your childhood VHS tape could be worth a fortune. The collection, that's right. If you got a pile of VHS tapes that haven't been touched since the dawn of the digital media age, you could make a fortune on them. Blockbuster video cassettes are a relic of yesteryear, but a lot of people still want them. They're going for a shocking amount of money on eBay, including classics like Back to the Future and even Fast and the Furious. You could get a lot of money if you have them. Some people just like watching and, you know, watching the old school VHS look to it. You got to keep them in a cool, dry place with little to no climate change in order to keep them in the best possible shape, just so you know. So Back to the Future is going for $14,080 on eBay. $14,080, a brand new Back to the Future VHS. Gremlins, $4,500. Fast and the Furious, $1,250. First Blood, brand new VHS condition, $15,000. And all you had to do was buy it for $9.99 back then. Teen Wolf, $6,700. Halloween 2, $1,200. Pinocchio, $10,000. Dumbo, $20,000. I'm just saying you can make a lot of money. And if you do make a lot of money, perhaps you could buy George Clooney's Lake Como estate, which he's selling for a cool $107 million. So good luck if you can get that. I hope you do. I'm rooting for you here. Also, too, as I look at the state of the world today, I notice that there is a supermodel named Emily Ratajkowski, who has just recently been dumped, and she's single again. I don't know if she was dumped or not, but either way, she'll go out with any guy who will buy her dinner. So, guys, just pay attention to what I'm telling you. You could end up like Al Pacino, who's 83 years old, and he split with Noor Alfala, 29 years old, 3 months after welcoming a baby. She's fired for physical custody to pave the way for child support. 83, I'm thinking, does Al really want the baby at this point? Hoo-ah! He likes the younger women, what can I tell you? And speaking of things that'll make you gross, Matthew McConaughey apparently gave Sonny Hostin or Joy Behar, a foot massage on The View. Oof, I mean, that's just gross. Do we need to see this? Does anybody need to see Matthew McConaughey giving Joy Behar a foot massage? I like McConaughey too, come on. But if that doesn't get you nauseous enough, Kamala Harris showed off her granny moves at a White House hip-hop party. Yeah, even with the granny pants on and everything, showing her, you know, granny moves. All right, we got a lot more to get to on the Dana Show. The Michigan kidnapping case against Gretchen Whitmer. The guys who've been acquitted, were they federales? Were they undercover federal operatives? Were they informants? Who were these guys? Got more details on that for you straight ahead.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on The Dana Show.
You know, I have three kids. My son is almost nine. He'll be nine on Veterans Day. My daughter just turned seven, and I have a three-year-old. And the battle over public schools is heating up in a big, big way. I always think about that because Dana talks about how, you know, when your kids cross the threshold into the classroom, they're still your kids. They're still your kids. This is a battle that's heating up and is not going to go away. I just bring this up to you because in a lot of places right now, what we're dealing with is parents at school board meetings who are very, very angry over the curriculum that is being taught in the classroom. You know, the other day, Senator Kennedy read from those two very graphic books. And the clip went viral. And every radio host in America tried to do the same thing, play it. I did. We had a bleep it, bleep, lots of bleeps, a whole lot of bleeps, right? But everybody understood the point of what the senator was getting across. Parents go to these school board meetings and they speak out. And there you have people on the left who do not believe parents should have a say in things. And then the minute that a parent stands up and says, I want this pornographic book taken out of my kid's library, they scream book bans, book bans. There's no book bans in America. Book bans don't exist in the United States of America. If you want to buy a genderqueer, you can buy it on Amazon. The question is, should this be in a classroom or not? Should this be in the school library or not? That's the question. That's the only question that is to be asked of this. When parents started going to school board meetings during COVID in particular, they're learning about the curriculum of their kids because it's being sent home with them. And then also going and saying, I don't want masks. I don't want vaccine mandates, all these things. How did the Biden administration react? They labeled the parents as potential domestic violent extremists. That's what they said. Merrick Garland, the attorney general, worked with the National School Boards Association to put out that letter that said parents at school board meetings could be domestic violent extremists. It was designed to get you to sit down and shut up and to never, ever, ever get out of line because you don't want big black suburban showing up in front of your house and it's the FBI there because you said the wrong thing at a school board meeting. Now, you know, and I know, and we all have seen this with our own eyes. Moms and dads are terrorists, potentially. Catholics are terrorists, potentially. The government weaponizing against pro-lifers who go and pray outside of abortion clinics. The weaponization of government is something we all need to talk about and understand and then fix and get to the bottom of. And I salute the Republicans who are behind this. I really do. I salute them for trying to get to the bottom line and get to the bottom of and then to fix the problem of the government being weaponized against its own people. And too often we find, whether it's with January 6th or whether it's with the plot of the Michigan governor kidnapping plot, that the FBI, the federales, are involved somehow. and that they are basically creating the circumstances by which these things go wrong. And a big part of that, I believe, is because you remember there was that whistleblower that came forward years ago? Whistleblower comes forward years ago and says, we've been told that we have to make fighting domestic violent extremism our big priority. Let's face it, right? Al-Qaeda, ISIS, not what they once were. But the FBI, NSA, CIA, they all have to justify their big expensive budgets and their ability to spy on you, surveil you, read your emails, listen to your phone calls, see your Facebook posts, etc. So the FBI was given a mandate from the Attorney General, Merrick Garland. Focus on domestic violent extremism. The problem is, whistleblower comes forward, he says, we can't find any cases of it. You know, there are extremists out there and there are extremist groups, but they're not well organized. They're a bunch of buffoons. Most of the time they have these crazy ideas in their heads, but they have no means to implement them. That's not good enough. You need to raise the case numbers. So what do? Well, how about sending some people who might be undercover FBI operatives or informants? You know, guys with criminal records who want to get a pass, who then cooperate with the FBI, but then they wind up leading the actual event. I mean, I still to this day question whether Ray Epps is a Fed. And he's a big crybaby. You know, this whole thing with poor Ray Epps, that day on January 6th or January 5th, the night before when he goes, tomorrow we go in the Capitol, the day of telling people to go into the Capitol, no charges against Ray Epps, nothing. When they asked Christopher Wray, the FBI director, whether or not there were any federal operatives there that day on January 6th, he said, I can't comment. Now, Ray Epps goes to the New York Times and whines to them about this crazy white right-wing conspiracy saying that he's a Fed. And how dare they say this? And he's been besmirked. But a lot of people turn around and go, well, dude, how come you didn't get arrested for telling people to go into the Capitol? And if there is an insurrection here, you told people to go in, you moved the police barricade, you gave them the green light. Why did nothing happen to you? So if Ray Epps is in fact just a victim of circumstance, can't the FBI director just do him a solid, let everybody know that he's not working with them? And of course, the New York Times writes that because they want access to things. And somebody in the FBI or somewhere else asked them to do the reporter a favor. The reporter wants access to classified briefings and everything else. So this is how the game works. A jury acquitted three men Friday in the last trial connected to a plan to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, a scheme that was portrayed as an example of homegrown terrorism on the eve of the 2020 presidential election. William Knoll, twin brother of Michael Knoll and Eric Monitor, William Knoll, twin brother Michael Knoll and Eric Molitor were found not guilty of providing support for a terrorist act and a weapon charge. They were the last of 14 men to face charges in state or federal court. Nine were convicted, and now five have been cleared. The Knowles and Molitor were accused of supporting leaders of the plan by participating in military-style drills and traveling to see Whitmer's vacation home in northern Michigan. The key players, Adam Fox and Barry Croft Jr., were convicted of a kidnapping conspiracy last year in a different court. There were gasps in the courtroom Friday morning as the jury four-person announced not guilty verdicts, first for the brothers and then for Molitor. Deliberations began Thursday morning and lasted a few more hours on Friday. The men cried as they hugged their lawyers and supporters. You gentlemen are free to leave, the judge said. Authorities have said an attack on Whitmer began to simmer at a regional summit of anti-government extremists in Dublin, Ohio, in the summer of 2020. Fox, Croft and William Knoll were in attendance while an FBI informant, also inside the gathering, secretly recorded profanity-laced screeds threatening violence against public officials. The disgust was also fueled by government-imposed restrictions during the COVID-19 pandemic, according to recordings, text messages, and social media posts introduced as evidence at trial. Whitmer's chief of staff said the verdicts were disappointed. The state attorney general said the verdicts are not what we had hoped for. I thought they had these guys. Of course, the question that I want to know in all of this is, whose idea was this? How did this whole thing become? Informants and undercover FBI agents were inside the group for months before arrests were made in October of 2020. Nine men were previously convicted in state or federal court, either through guilty pleas or at three other trials. Sean Fix and Brian Higgins pleaded guilty in Antrim County and had agreed to cooperate, but were never called as prosecution witnesses at the last trial. after the plot was thwarted. Whitmer blamed then-President Donald Trump, saying he had given comfort to those who had spread fear and hatred and division. And Trump called the kidnapping plan a fake deal. Well, it was a fake deal. See, I think what we know now about this whole thing is that you had some guys who were spouting off, I'd love to kidnap the governor of Michigan. I'd love to take her away. I'd love to do this. I'd love to do that. But they didn't really have any plans to put it into action. That's where the FBI enters the situation. That's where the informants who have criminal records, and these are bad guys. But, you know, they want to help. So they go, well, you know, I've heard about this. And they go, oh, really? Yeah. I've heard about this. They want to kidnap the governor. But then nothing happens. Months go by and nothing happens. And then all of a sudden you realize it's the people who are actually the FBI informants who are the ones that then get the plot going. Because I'm sure there's all kinds of pressure back with their contacts going, when is this going to happen? When is this going to happen? Nothing. These guys are just blowing off steam and saying stupid things. Nothing's going to happen. But the problem is, if nothing happens, how do you say that there is this domestic violent extremism problem? How do you say that? The roles of the FBI and informants muddle the Michigan governor kidnapping case. The FBI lured men for Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping plot. These are headlines. New York Times, AP News. Gretchen Whitmer, Michigan governor kidnap plot case collapses. As U.S. federal jury has acquitted two men accused of plotting to kidnap Michigan's governor. Jury learns of rogue FBI informants in Whitmer kidnap case, but not the full story. Echoes of FBI entrapment haunt failed plot to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. Two men are acquitted in a plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. The FBI concocted the Whitmer kidnapping plot, acquitted man says. FBI's tactics doomed case against men charged in the kidnapping plot of Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. I mean, I could go on, but I think you get the point, right? I think you get the point. The one guy who was acquitted here, afterward, bunch of gun enthusiasts, a group of gun enthusiasts was overblown by federal authorities into an illicit plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, one of two men already acquitted in the case, said. He said, this is a group of dudes who shoot guns and talk crap. In that courthouse, a jury spent the last 2 weeks hearing prosecutors' case against Barry Croft and Adam Fox. And what they found was that there was nothing that these guys were actually trying to do. I mean, it's ridiculous that the government is still going to try to continue to push this narrative that these people are actually terrorists. I hope this jury does the same thing the last jury did for us. These guys don't deserve to be in here for saying mean things and offending people. The defense claims the FBI, through undercover agents and informants, were behind the plan and that Fox and Croft were duped into going along with it. The FBI obviously concocted this entire thing. Without their presence, this would have never happened. One guy spent 18 months in jail before he was acquitted. So the question is, how much more of this do we have to see of our own government getting involved in this stuff? It's like what's been going on in Florida, too, with those the alleged neo-Nazis who are everywhere now and saying that they support Joe Biden. And all the guys are wearing masks on their faces. You notice that? They all have the same look, same uniform. A lot of times you see these guys in these hate rallies, they all have the same haircut. It's very interesting. One guy said he's not giving up his anti-government beliefs, but he's also not looking over his shoulder. He said, everything was taken from me. My entire life was just taken from beneath me, and I'm still trying to build that back up. But it's happening. It's moving forward. I live my life and do things without fear. I'm sure the FBI is still going to continue to watch me, probably forever. But so what? It doesn't change my beliefs. If you have a weaponized government, and they are hell-bent on proving that the terrorist today is not some dude from Al-Qaeda in the Middle East. It's you with a MAGA hat on or you speaking at a school board meeting because you raise your voice. Or it's you because you're praying in mass in Latin. Or it's you because you're praying outside an abortion clinic. You're the terrorist. And that's why they need more money. That's why they need more funding. That's why they need more power over you. It's why they need to be able to read your emails, monitor your phone calls, see what you're posting on Facebook, and then be able to take that stuff down under misinformation or disinformation. You see? It's all about keeping you in check and making sure the government has all the money it needs and the power it needs, and you are just a mere subject. The weaponization of government committee, the subcommittee on weaponization of government, I think is one of, if not the most consequential things to come out of the Republican victory in the House of Representatives. It is one of, if not the most consequential thing. Because even though the Republicans barely got the majority, they were able to create that committee, and we are learning so much more, whether it comes to COVID or this kind of nonsense, about the government's role in trying to control our lives. This is The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana, coming right back.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. New York Times had an op-ed the other day highlighting the impact of two-parent homes. Isn't that something? It was a column by, you know, one of their kooky liberal people, but they were saying it was a different kind of privilege. A different kind of privilege. Nicholas Kristof writing that. A different kind of privilege. And how the Democrats need to focus on the privilege that kids in two-parent homes enjoy. Yes, there is something to be said for a stable home environment and not for forced government outcomes. Kamala Harris, the worst vice president in the history of the country, is speaking out about a number of different things. And I want to share two clips with you before our time together on The Dana Show ends. And I begin my afternoon drive show in Philadelphia on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Kamala Harris advocates for government-forced equal outcomes. This is what we're watching play out with climate change and with the push for EVs. Cut one.
Supposed so-called extreme leaders are suggesting it's a bad thing to care about and pay attention to inequities. To say DEI is a bad thing, when in fact, if we want fair outcomes, we must understand what are disparities and then accommodate and adjust for those disparities if we want equal outcomes. So environmental justice raises those points, right? Equitable outcomes. Is everyone coming out the same way? Well, if you don't start on the same base, everybody can have an equal amount. You're still not going to end up on the same base, right? If we want equal outcomes, we need to take into account not everybody starts out on the same base.
What do we want equal outcomes? No, we want equal opportunities. We're not going to have equal outcomes under our system, but that's what the left wants. They want equal outcomes. Everybody gets a trophy. Except when you're an adult, the trophy becomes a check. In order to do that, though, you have to scare people. So Kamala Harris was speaking to college students and bringing up the whole entire idea of anxiety and what that means in anxiety. And the Democrats love to push anxiety, raise the cortisol stress levels, cause people to turn around and need somebody to come in and save the day for them. Cut two.
You all, as I said earlier, have coined the phrase climate anxiety to describe what is associated with that existential crisis. And so there are a number of things that we have done that I'm proud of since we came in office, including putting $1 trillion into a number of things that are about adaptation and resilience and what we need to do to build a clean energy economy.
The anxiety, the existential anxiety to deal with all this. I tell you, it really is amazing as we watch this battle play out. How much anxiety are the auto workers facing right now because the government is forcing them to transition to electric vehicles? Huh? That's the question. I've had so much fun hanging out with you today on The Dana Show. I hope you have a wonderful weekend and a joyful Rosh Hashanah if you, in fact, do celebrate. I'm going to hit Philadelphia, but before I do, of course, we'll turn to Steve for something stupid. And I know, Steve, there were a lot you had to cover today. It was very difficult to make your choice.
Oh, yeah, but we got Jen Psaki. She's always good for some good stuff. So she was on MSNBC. And they're trying to somehow find a way to defend Hunter. And here's the seems like the talking point is.
But right now, what we're looking at, and I think on the politics of this, you know, millions of Americans have dealt with family members who have dealt with drug addiction, who've dealt with alcohol addiction, who have dealt with a range of addiction. My bet is right now, this is a heartbroken president in the White House who is worried about his son. And we're all watching to see kind of what happens with this.
A heartbroken son. I'll tell you what. I'm heartbroken that I have to leave you now, but I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Just a heartbroken president dealing with his son, who's an idiot crackhead who helped to make millions and millions of dollars on Ukraine and China and Romania and Russia and God knows where else. This is Rich Zeoli signing off for The Dana Show. Thank you.